This is John in Yellow, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acra.
Wash your hands. Avoid sick people and touching your face. There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Information is available at cdc.gov/COVID-19.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Lillian Liu of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is Timer with the WGXC News. Go to the newsroom at wgxc.org. For more information about anything you hear here, Yancey Roy in Newsday reports that New York lawmakers passed more police reforms June 10th. They have now approved 10 bills in 3 days back in Albany after weeks of protest around the country in the wake of the murder of George Floyd by the Minneapolis police. Legislators voted June 10th to make permanent a special prosecutor's office investigating cases in which a person dies in an encounter with law enforcement. Governor Andrew Cuomo had created the office in the state attorney general's office by executive order in 2015. Now it becomes permanent when Cuomo signs the bill. Republicans say the office takes away authority from locally elected prosecutors, while Democrats counter that those local prosecutors often are chummy with local police. Lawmakers also voted to create, mostly on party lines, the Law Enforcement Misconduct Investigative Office, also within the attorney general's office. Earlier in the week, they voted to make police disciplinary records subject to disclosure, outlaw chokeholds, establish a right to record police activity, and order body cameras for state police. Cuomo has said he will sign the bills. Quote, "Make no mistake, we know that what we did is not a cure. We know it's a first step. It acknowledges that laws alone are important, but they can't fix racism in America," unquote, Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins said. Quote, "But it begins to root out injustice and to bring justice to our justice system. It is a step and it is a path to equality," unquote. Other localities are passing their own police reforms. On June 10th, the Times Union reports, Schenectady Mayor Gary McCarthy signed an executive order banning police chokeholds and creating several other reforms the day before a scheduled demonstration outside City Hall. There was also a protest in Kingston June 10th. And another plan for Saugerties June 11th, and two other protests in Chatham and West Point planned on June 13th. Sarah Trafton is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Greene County lawmakers toured the site of the new county jail on June 10th. Quote, "It's going fairly well," unquote, County Legislator Chairperson Patrick Linger of New Baltimore said. Quote, "There are some hiccups with the supply chain, things coming from other states, but we were able to work around that," unquote. Linger said 80 to 85 workers are present on the site every day. He said the shell of the building is complete, while pointing out the workforce has remained healthy. A task force of correction officers regularly checks the building for security issues, Linger said. The 64-bed facility is expected to be completed in July 2021. The jail project is funded by a $39 million bond from Robert W. Baird & Company and an $8.1 million contribution from the county. Catskill Representative Michael Bullock agreed that construction was going well, but was dismayed to see the size of the facility firsthand. Quote, "Was this really all necessary?" unquote, he said. Legislator Matthew Lavera, another Catskill representative, shared his colleague's opinion, but noted the project has stayed within the budget. The Public Safety Committee had previously approved a series of project changes at its June 8th meeting. The first change was a reduction of more than $185,601 to be paid to Jensen Construction Group for the engineering of the garage, cell fit-out reduction, chiller steel and shoring system freight, Other changes approved included an expansion of services to James H. Malloy Incorporated of Loudonville in the amounts of $3,000 for ground thawing, $7,200 for the Central Hudson Access Road, and $6,800 for crane stabilization plates, as well as to N Infrastructure Technologies of Clifton Park in the amounts of $12,000 for additional security cameras and $7,500 for cell lighting control. None of the changes resulted in a change to the overall project budget. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Lauren Stanforth is reporting for the Times Union that Rensselaer County Executive Steve McLaughlin said June 10th that his county is approving permits for public pools based on pre-pandemic guidelines for opening public pools, including pools at campgrounds and private clubs. McLaughlin pointed to the dearth of guidance provided by the state on the subject. Under the pre-pandemic requirements, approval of permits was based on criteria such as water testing and lifeguard certification. At Governor Andrew Cuomo's daily news briefing on June 10th, aide Melissa DeRosa said the state guidance for municipal pools should be out in the coming days. At the same time, some Capital Region municipal pools had already announced they are not opening for the summer, including in Colony and Bethlehem. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has said that there is no proof coronavirus can spread in recreational water. Read more about the story in the Times Union. Nora Mishenek is reporting for Columbia Green Media that 31 employees of Columbia County have been approved to take 1 or 2 months off this summer as part of the county administration's voluntary full furlough program. The program is estimated to save the county $81,000. Employees approved for voluntary summer furloughs are exempt from the county's mandatory 13-day furlough initiative, which went into effect this week and is projected to save the county $1.5 million. The county was prudent to act early to reduce expenses, Columbia County Board of Supervisors Chair Matt Morrell said. Quote, if we had waited until August or September to implement strategies, we would have limited our options and we would have been faced with layoffs, unquote, he said. County officials worked with the United Public Service Employees Union, which represents about 550 county workers, to negotiate the terms of the furloughs. Corrections officers, who are represented by the State Law Enforcement Officers Union, AFSCME Council 82, are also part of the county's plan to reduce costs. Beginning in June, corrections officers are subject to a 6-day furlough. More than 40 corrections officers and command staff at the Columbia County Jail, including Captain Brian Gardner, will have a mandatory day off with no pay, 1 day out of every month until November. The measure is expected to save the county $65,000. In addition to furloughs, county officials also implemented a hiring freeze on non-essential positions, reduced spending, and halted infrastructure projects, which Morrell called, quote, planning for the worst-case scenario, unquote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com and read more about any of these stories in the newsroom at WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, June 11th. Yes, folks, we find ourselves in protest season already, and here I still have my COVID decorations up. That's only half a joke. Green County is doing very well in that respect, and some of that can be blamed on us implementing safety procedures before it got here. We gotta keep it up, or else we risk losing the gains that we have fought so hard for, people. So keep those masks on in the stores, keep washing those hands, and if somebody isn't wearing a mask, then try to avoid them. Today, alright, getting to the weather, looks pretty uncomfortable. Starting out at 73 this morning with dew points in the upper 60s and lower 70s today, things will be sticky. Leftover rain from last night lingers until noon. Chances of thunder are present. Our high today of 84 occurs around 4 p.m. After 8 p.m., the air gets comfortable again. Temperatures lower to the upper 50s overnight. And so do the dew points, which will stay there, leaving Friday comfortable as the day gets warmer. It will be dry and warm with a high of 83. Saturday will be very nice with a tiny chance of rain, and Sunday will be moist. Pollen levels are low today, medium high tomorrow. The next high tides will be at 7:59 a.m. and at 8:43 p.m. The next low tides will be at 2:38 p.m. and tomorrow at 2:55 a.m. Water temperature will be 74 degrees today. Sunset will be at 8:11 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:18 a.m. Looking way up, we see the sun appears to be waking up. I say that tentatively, since this solar minimum has been pretty hard to crawl out of. Sunspots are becoming more active. chances of radio communication enhancement are increasing steadily. Today, we can see sunspot 2765 crackling with B-class solar flares. Solar wind speed is currently 436 kilometers per second at 2.6 protons per milliliter. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 11. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Stephen Merritt of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We know now that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man's and yet as mortal as his own. We know now that as human beings busied themselves about their various concerns, they were scrutinized and studied, perhaps almost as narrowly as a man with a microscope might scrutinize the transient creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
You have tuned into the River Newsroom's Hudson Valley Coronavirus Report from Lissa Harris of The River and Roger Hannigan-Gilson of The Other Hudson Valley. Go to theotherhudsonvalley.com or therivernewsroom.com for more information and links to the stories included here. This report is a collaboration with several Hudson Valley journalists, airing on WGXC 90.7 FM at midnight, 5, 7, and 9 a.m., and online in the audio archives at WGXC.org. La Voz, a Spanish-language news magazine covering the Hudson Valley, is translating these roundups and co-publishing them on its website in Spanish at lavoz.bard.edu.
Lissa Harris has this report first. Are protests fueling the pandemic? It's an urgent question, and after two solid weeks of nationwide demonstrations in places both large and small, we still don't know. If protests are a major risk factor for spreading COVID-19, New York City is likely to feel the impact. Large protests in the city were underway by Thursday, May 28th, drawing thousands of people into the streets over the past 2 weeks. Although the daily number of new cases in the city has plummeted to a tiny fraction of its early April peak, New York City still has community transmission. On June 9th, the City Department of Health reported 110 new cases, down from 6,374 on April 6th. Governor Andrew Cuomo has made testing available to anyone who participated in recent protests, and health experts are encouraging participants to get tested and do 2 weeks of voluntary quarantine. So far, there's no sign of an uptick in protest-related cases in New York City, although it may be too soon to know for sure. It can take up to 14 days after exposure for symptoms to appear, although the median is closer to 4 or 5 days. Even after symptoms appear, people may wait until they're desperately ill to seek testing or treatment. Then there's the wait for test results, which might be a day, a week, or even longer. The horror of coronavirus data lag, as Atlantic put it, means that it takes weeks, perhaps even a month or more, to know the impact of an event or a policy change. By then, it has already taken its toll. Some experts say the early data on case counts in places with large protests is encouraging. Epidemiologist George Rutherford told the San Francisco Chronicle that if protests had caused outbreaks, he would have expected to see upticks in Minnesota by now. Quote, Minnesota is falling steadily. There's one slight uptick on June 1st, but that may be because of a weekend reporting lag, unquote, he said. Quote, but it's all trending down. If you look back 7 to 10 days, you would expect to be seeing a significant jump by now, unquote. Other experts are braced for a spike they feel is inevitable. For epidemiologists who deal regularly in the science of suffering, the protests present an opportunity to learn more about the virus. Jeremy Kondideik a senior policy fellow with the Center for Global Development and a member of the team that helped chart the Obama administration's Ebola response, noted in a Twitter thread that the protests represent a mix of factors already known to boost coronavirus spread, large crowds, people yelling loudly, and those known to help lessen risk, outdoors, widespread mask wearing, people moving around and not prolonging contact with any one person. Tear gas and pepper spray, which police have deployed broadly, increase the risk of transmission by causing people to cough and take off contaminated masks. Large-scale arrests may have created opportunities for super-spreading. More than 2,000 protesters have been arrested in New York City, and many were detained overnight in close quarters without masks or hand sanitizer. Back in April, a month before George Floyd's death, Georgetown law professor and former reserve police officer Rosa Brooks wrote in a Washington Post op-ed that considering the pandemic, police should consider getting less physical. Quote, except in cases involving serious violent crimes, police officers nationwide need to go hands-off, unquote, she wrote. Police response to protests in large cities has mostly been anything but that. Scientific knowledge about which behaviors are most risky in the pandemic is evolving, but a few recent data points from Missouri point to a reason for optimism about the risk of protests. So far, public health officials say there have been no additional cases traced to large pool parties at Lake of the Ozarks over Memorial Day weekend, despite the fact that an infected person attended. In another highly publicized situation, two COVID-19 positive hairdressers in Springfield who wore masks and worked with 140 people while they were unknowingly infected did not pass the virus to any of their clients. These are just a few incidents, but they suggest a potential positive impact of taking measures to reduce risk, like holding gatherings outdoors and wearing masks. A recent British study also gave a boost to the value of mask wearing. Researchers from Cambridge and Greenwich modeled different population-wide scenarios using data from known person-to-person transmission chains and concluded that if more than half the population wore masks habitually, the R-naught for COVID-19 would drop below 1, causing the pandemic to shrink rather than grow. With outdoor events looking less risky and mask wearing more protective than scientists thought in the early days of the pandemic, there's reason to hope that recent massive protests haven't already sparked massive outbreaks. But even if that's true, there may be another sobering bit of collateral damage in the collision between pandemic and policing: public trust. Police work and the contact tracing done by public health departments are separate efforts, but in the age of surveillance, people may fear they are working hand in glove, and public officials aren't necessarily helping. Minneapolis Public Safety Commissioner John Harrington used the phrase contact tracing in a press conference to describe police intelligence gathering, a move that may have hurt local health efforts, Business Insider writes. There's also a worry that by telling people to stay home and then not denouncing the protests, epidemiologists and public health experts have eroded their credibility with the public. It's a nuanced topic, and debates among high-level experts are raging on Twitter about how they should be communicating with the public about it. For black people in public health, the dilemma of how to respond is especially personal. Charlottesville doctor Tayson Bell, who specializes in infectious disease and critical care, told The New Yorker that he's felt torn about whether to participate in protests. Quote, I'm a black man and a physician. I can't choose one identity over the other, nor do I want to. Two competing factors, racism and COVID, are killing my community. It feels really unfair that I can't fight both at the same time, unquote. At least one epidemiologist has weighed in with some very preliminary back-of-the-envelope math, estimating the number of COVID-19 deaths that the protests will cause in the U.S. is between 50 and 500. A disproportionate number of them will be black, Trevor Bedford of the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center predicted. By comparison, police fatally shoot about 1,000 people a year in the United States. There's no way to know if those numbers will be borne out, but if any place in the nation is likely to yield data in the coming weeks on how protests have affected transmission, it might be New York. Now, in New York State, on Wednesday, June 10th, the daily COVID briefing by Governor Cuomo was one of the briefest of so far, just under 8 minutes, and did not include the daily death toll, 56, a hair up from daily deaths in New York State over the past week, which have been below 50 since June 4th. New positives are still trending downward with 674 new cases in the state. 14 states and Puerto Rico are now seeing higher numbers of new COVID-19 cases than at any point in the pandemic so far, the Washington Post reports. Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, California, Florida, Kentucky, New Mexico, North Carolina, Mississippi, Oregon, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, and Utah. Cuomo made the spiking states a cautionary tale in his June 10th briefing. Quote, if you look at the states and the countries that have been reopening, more of them have gotten into trouble than not. As we sit here today, states are getting into trouble. Newspapers will tell you more than a dozen states are now seeing increases, unquote, he said. Quote, reopen, reopen, reopen. Be careful, be careful, be careful, unquote, he said. Cuomo and the New York State Department of Health have once again reversed course on a nursing home policy. On May 18th, Cuomo announced that all nursing home staff must be tested for COVID-19 twice a week. On June 10th, the state eased up on that requirement, saying the staff must be tested once a week. The New York Post, which has been doing some vigorous and pointy reporting on Cuomo's handling of nursing home outbreaks, took credit for the policy change. On June 8th, the Post reporter Bernadette Hogan got a scoop on a story about weeks-long delay for nursing homes getting their test results back. Announced by New York State on June 9th and June 10th, there are a couple of new COVID-19 dashboards on New York State's website, one that shows the percent of each county's daily test results coming back positive, and one that graphs current and historical data on the percent of tests coming back positive for the state and each of its 10 economic development regions. According to Wednesday's June 10th daily testing data, the North Country region had no positive test results in the past 24 hours, the only one of the state's 10 regions to hit zero, although Central New York and the Southern Tier were in the single digits. Now for the region-by-region report, starting in the lower Hudson Valley. During an appearance on Westchester County Executive George Latimer's COVID-19 briefing, Metro North Railroad President Catherine Rinaldi reported that ridership jumped on June 8th when New York City reopened to 20,140, about 4% higher than it was during the middle of the pandemic. LowHUD.com also reports that the Metro North added 19 trains to its schedule on June 8th, and it will add another 48 to the morning.